I enter my 39th year in the church. And last week, one of the young people asked me with admiration on her face, how have you, she started halting. How, you say you come in from your 15 and how have you maintained, or you keep it up so long? The other young person was saying that with the pressures that teenagers face of sexual engagement and pressures in the family, pressures toward various kinds of drugs, it's difficult for young people to maintain any kind of focus. And when I was growing up, it wasn't far different. I had started drinking from early. Had my bouts of drunkenness, actually. I know it is to be drunk. Brother Smith said recently that the things that would change in your life in the next 10 years would be as a result of the people you meet and the books you read. And I met some people who love to beat juice, as we used to call it. So I fell into that crowd. Guys used to drink much older. You know, they were seniors. I mean, that's much like when I was sort of 14, they would have been, you know, 30 and more. It seemed that way at that time. I remember going downtown, you know, you leave Ohio uptown, because you had certain bars downtown that were known for man who can hold them liquor. Man said, boy, I don't have East Street, we drink, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Miss Pam Bar, East Street. I say, you don't call addresses them times, Miss Pam Bar, but you know. The man who can hold them liquor, drink this and so. And some Saturday mornings, we went downtown to beat juice. That was the crowd I was in. And I was very interested in athletics, and but mostly football, as I told you. And most of you know by heart what position on the field I played. Left back. Defense. I played defense, left back. And I was also strongly involved in music. My brother was a sound system man. At a popular sound system in Kingston called Apache Hi-Fi. And when there was an early teenage dance party, my brother was the official sound for TADP. Traveled all over Jamaica playing. So it's my strong interest in music and in vintage music. And I'd even found my own group called Inspirers. And only dropped it when I became an Adventist. You know, Adventist condemn, all of that kind of thing. So my career came to a screeching halt. But I went on to other things. Spent time, you know, hanging out with musicians. I used to like to go to rehearsals. Go to In Crowd on a Wednesday night to the rehearsal. I remember the first time I heard Dells. You know, this song. Baby dear, I've been thinking how good it was when you were here. My thoughts of you don't have an ending, and memories of you are everywhere. Oh, I'm not complaining.
Years, you know, I'm telling you, dance. I'm telling you. The love we had stays on my mind.
I remember meeting Dennis Brown very early because Dennis was living off Walton Park at that
No, no locks, Dennis. So, my life was moving into music, sports, drinking, and girls some early. My brothers had a very bad reputation. Both of them have, I don't know, both of them have between them probably 12 to 14, I mean, each children. I had one who was married about four times. One had been married to one woman, but, you know, had a number of children before. But one was particularly, you know, promiscuous. It was a sound system one. So, you know, from early, mostly about girls and and so on. My life was going that way. Sometime when I'd be coming up from school, because my mother left, you know, to look life in America. When I walk, you know, along with my books, I walk up with a girl coming to the house. Because me control the house sometime then. Very young. Yeah, mommy control the house. My sister very smart, she can't talk to me. Because I was on, my father died when I was 10. So, I was on my own, man. Pleasure. Saturday nights parties. On Saturday nights. Parties. Saturday in the day, football. We play football on asphalt. You mash up your knee and all. Well, you love football so much, it don't matter. Mash up your toe and all. You can play football all barefooted. Football. I used to love the relay especially. And I'm not I'm really hard, man. But I used to love the relay. Girls, music. Until I heard a man on the radio named Armstrong who told me that there was a purpose to life. I remember I was in love with a girl, Janet, as I told you. I was so struck. This concept of the purpose in life, I'd never thought about any purpose. My purpose was to have fun, sex and drinking, dancing, sporting. Not even so much interesting. I mean, school, I wasn't doing very well at all. I was assimilated. The only thing I liked was English. I wasn't stimulated at all. So I don't think I had great teachers. But if I did, my mind wasn't ready for them. And they certainly didn't find a way to stimulate me. So I wasn't doing well. And I had no direction. When my father died when I was 10, my mother had gone away to look life. There wasn't anybody superintending me. Uncles were estranged. So I was on my own. I would have ended up like the vast majority of Jamaican men had. Today at my age, I'd been some substandard job or if probably unemployed, scrounging around, probably with seven children over the different place, six baby mothers. I don't know. Probably not supporting any more than one, if any. You could just look at my life where it was going. If I'd continued the drinking, it'd be even worse. Might have died already. Cirrhosis of the liver or something else or some cardiovascular disease. Continued with a womanizing AIDS might have had me and might have had me before the time when the retroviral drugs were so readily available. You know, so many different ways my life could have gone. Had I not heard the broadcast and received the booklet, The Seven Laws of Success, my life was radically changed. But when I started to think about purpose, and you know, to this day, I wonder how people can live and don't think about the purpose of life. I say I wonder, but because I've read so much now in psychology, sociology, and philosophy, I kind of understand. It's because I read a book called Empire of Illusion, The Triumph of Superficiality. Showing how entertainment controls people. Western world is so obsessed with with sports, with entertainment. Even the school, you know, somebody called me this week and really wants me to bring to public attention this matter of how the high schools are competing for sporting talent, how they're bringing on people just because of sports. There are people entering high schools now who have no academic record or even inclination, but just because of sports. And how it is corrupting the schools. And the schools are more interested now in branding and in making their name. And the person who contacted me also was a big sportsman in his time and did played Manning Cup and so on. So entertainment, you know, the biggest entertainment. So the anesthetics is applied. So people are not people. People are so taken up either with their jobs or with entertainment that there's little time for reflection. But also, I wonder how educated people. I tell you, I don't know how people live and don't ask what's the purpose of life. How they live and don't ask what is the purpose of it all?
You're using this wonderful book, The Meaning of Life, by a philosopher, Cottingham. And I don't know, these questions have those from early. But I find that among my friends, they have never thought about it. And I find people are universal. Oh, you can be universally educated. Have a degree and never thought about the purpose of life. So then how do you construct it? How do you decide what to spend time on? What to devote your interest to? But we can't do everything. We must choose what we will do. It's baffling to me, except that I understand how culture works and how people are distracted. And so I was fortunate very early, you know, I began to think about life. And last year I lost two of my great mentors and friends, Rex Nettleford, John Maxwell. And the debts and Nettleford's debtors really are still affected me. I owe so much to these two men. From Nettleford, among other things, I developed a Teutonic dedication to work. Nettleford never took any vacation. The last vacation he took was in 63. He worked every holiday. He was in his office at 5:30 in the morning. I never took that early morning thing from him. But long hours. Rex would be up at 5 o'clock to call Michael and other friends. He wouldn't call me that early because I'm not an early morning. But he called me in the night. I know I'm late. A dedication to work. Just a stamina about work I got from Rex. Reading from Maxwell. I went to his funeral. Everybody. When I heard Agri Brown, who was my most influential lecturer at university. My good friend Rex probably felt a little bit jealous when I said that. Agri was really my favorite at university. Agri was very philosophical. When Agri said that Maxwell was the most well-read person he had met, that was a tribute. From Maxwell, as a youth, I got this fascination to know things, to know, to have information. His was the biggest library I'd ever seen as a young man. I grew up in a house where the only book we had was a Bible. Yeah, I never grew up with that. But we had radio and we had TV. First in the avenue, we had TV and bonanza up on a Friday night. My house place was packed. TV, but no books. Wrong values. Look back at it now. TV, but no books. And the one book I have, nobody was there able to explain it anyway. So it was of no value. It was a coded book. And when I think of all that Rex did, our great conversations and about black identity and, you know, the cultural identity and, well, Nettleford was an icon all over the world. Almost every week he was away lecturing. He was always doing so many important things. I could never think of Nettleford as being dead. It's just up to now I can't come to terms that Nettleford could. There were so many projects, so many things doing. But to what end? You know, I was at John's funeral last week. So many moving tributes to his life. So much he had done. Stood up for justice, for human rights. But the world is still an awful place. The environment is still being denuded. The issues that he fought are still with us. And yes, he made a contribution. And yes, we have made some kind of progress. But not the kind of sea change progress that those two men would have wanted. But very early throughout my association with them, I knew that I had a larger purpose. I could have gone into politics from early. Both of them were very close to Michael Mandy. And all of us, all three of us were great admirers of Manly. And I had the privilege of working with him in 76, long time, I was quite young. I remember touring with him during the state of emergency. Going to Freddie Nita's yard up in St. Catherine as before he was killed. Going down to Orange Lane Fire and, you know, and people were burnt up, and babies were thrown. I remember I went down with Manly at the time. And there was some picture with Manly and I, you know, I afro. It was a dread morning that morning, I remember. Never went into politics, never took up some of the causes that these men had. Because I saw there was something else, there was something greater. There was something that was transcendent, that captured my attention. There's something about the purpose of life. You know, Matthew 13, one of my favorite passages. They ask me how I stay. I've not found any other alternative. And I cannot, I don't understand how educated people have thought. I much prefer the contemplative atheist who has taught about these things and has consciously rejected God. That person I can deal with. But I don't find them among the young people, among my professional choir. I don't find many people who are atheists. I find people who believe it, that they believe in God. But it don't make any difference. Who can't believe in God and it doesn't make any difference? These things again are puzzling. Except that I know the answer. I know the answer. People are under the anesthetics. They're not thinking. People are not thinking. So much between the entertainment and just keeping up with the Joneses. They're not thinking. The best and the brightest are not thinking. Because you can be thinking and not wondering about the fragility of life. The shortness of life. What is it all about? Just a little speck. Before I go to you, let me quote from Pascal. Oh, brilliant philosopher. Pascal. I see these frightening expanses of the universe that shut me in. And I find myself stuck in one corner of this vast emptiness without knowing why I'm placed here rather than elsewhere. Or why from out of the whole of eternity that has gone on before me and the whole of eternity that will follow, this one tiny period has been given me in which to live out my life. You talk to the brightest people who have never thought about these things. A man thinking about him car, thinking about him SUV, thinking about his sexual conquest tonight. That's the extent. Are you talking about even the best and the brightest? When you look at
the spring break. The girls have moved on well in spring break, you know, are those who are at the elite universities. The best. That's the leaders of tomorrow. Leaders of tomorrow. Giving totally to the flesh. Just about fun. What a bleak tomorrow. Who will be there to deal with the real issues of tomorrow? If everybody's under the anesthetics and just with sex and sports.
You know, last year we lost, there's a generation of people. I'm to write about it. Jamaica is losing and we're not replacing them. Nettleford, Chevance, Maxwell. These people who lived beyond themselves. They saw something greater. It wasn't as great as what we were saying, but they saw something greater. There was black power, cultural identity, human rights, environment. They saw something greater than just pleasure. Unfortunately, my friend John, through smoking, could have lived longer. And I remember those early days when we used to go to Devon House. In smoking and drinking vodka and tonic. I was drinking fruit punch, no alcohol. But thankfully with my Adventist background, I never drank. Even though I come on when I drink at tonight's church, I didn't follow on it. Not because drinking is wrong. But I never developed that taste. I don't want it. I'm better off. I say, Maxwell, country has lost a great mind. Could have been alive. Is drinking, is smoking. I'm glad he was able to do a campaign, which you will start to see by the Ministry of Health on the anti-smoking campaign he did before he died to warn people about smoking. One of the early books I read when I came in the church in 1972, You Can Quit Smoking. It's not cute. It's not going to kill you. Not a cute thing. I'm healthier today. Perhaps I would have died. And I continued. My mother died because of Cravenier. I used to have to go buy her Cravenier. Never followed her. Never followed John when he was drinking. And he told me from early, and I said, boy, I'm glad. I kind of feel awkward when I drink all the time. Some pure drinking man around me, John Hearn, a drinker, alcohol, and all of them around me, and me look like a boy. I was a boy at the time, but you know, I want to feel like a boy, you know. So I feel bad. I said, no, man, don't feel too bad. I'm glad it's a pity I started. Yeah, man, I love my fruit punch, man. And them days, from them days, I developed a great taste. And Devon House made the best fruit punch in time there. Fruit punch gone down now, but Devon House had some great fruit punch in the 70s. You are losing a generation of people who were activists, who were thinking about the society or better in the world. Ideas, best and the bread, think about better in themselves. The biggest jobs that they can have. The biggest cars that they can have. The biggest houses and the amount of sex they can have. That is the biggest thing on your mind. I'm glad I won't be in a world when they will be taken over. Who will fight for the environment? Who will fight for human rights? Who will fight for poor people? Who will fight against the big corporations? You don't have enough of those people because too many people are taken up in their own pleasure. They're under the anesthetics. Anesthesia is the biggest occupation here now. People not thinking. You get people so busy. And you see with the technologies, in the Twitter age, there's no time to reflect. Who's going in bathroom anymore and sitting down in bathroom, I think. You are tweeting. Very important, though. You need to understand how the technologies are further dehumanizing us. And you have time to think. It's time to reflect. Or time to read hard copy books. Or even just to think. With Facebook and the number of friends you have on Facebook to reply to. When you come home, the amount of replies you have to do. It's affecting productivity because people on the job. We have problems at my office. Because the people I'm on MSN when they should be trying to get a story to write for me. We have to be cutting off some of these things now. Because they are addicted to Facebook. And a lot of the working class fellows to tag. The kinds of things are taking place on tag. You know how many working class friends I have who have not met no girl in a bar anywhere, you know? Tag. You meet a girl today, she said, you can come and see me tonight. I always remarkable stories of some of my friends. We meet a girl and say, yeah, man, I'm lonely. I'm over there in Denham Town and thing, you know. You can come deal with the thing tonight. Come check. Anywhere you want, any geography you want. I have some people say, why you not giant tag? Me, giant tag? But you know, they were telling me some well-known personalities want it. So, well, them want to join. So you're not, in other words, there is no time to think. And it's a part of the plan. You know, if I say that, if I'm an intelligent man, me is caught on tape saying that your technology is part of Satan, it looks backward. But you have to understand this thing. You're taking away your time. There are great benefits to it, you know, through the internet. We're able to bring down oppressive regimes. We're able to organize for human rights. So technologies are great. We can use the preaching. We can reach people. The church can mash up and there's a few of us that live, you know. And we can reach the world with the gospel with a few of us through the technologies. So they have tremendous benefits to technologies. But usually human beings don't use the technologies for the beneficial things. People not thinking. So Pascal used to think about that. I think about Maxwell and these people that. So what? What would the 76 years have been? What's the purpose of it? What is amazing is that so many people would believe in God. They were kind of wondering if you really believe in God, what are the implications that God really exists? And how should our lives be different? The poignant words of T.S. Eliot, one of my favorite poets. I know, Kelly, you would appreciate Eliot, your kind of philosophical mind. You would like this one. T.S. Eliot. People don't have an appreciation for poetry. But you lose something. If you don't understand the pleasures of the mind. If all the only pleasures you have is to go and dance and sensual pleasures. I mean, Jim Screech is there, but Jim Screech can't come to this. No, these are... T.S. Eliot. Oh, dark, dark, dark. They're all going to the dark. The vacant interstellar spaces. The vacant into the vacant. The captains, merchant bankers, eminent men of letters, the generous patrons of art, the statesmen and the rulers, distinguished civil servants, chairmen of many committees, industrial lords, petty contractors, all go into the dark. And dark the sun and the moon, and the almanac, the Gotha, and the Stock Exchange Gazette, the directory of directors, and call the sense and lost the motive of action. And we all go with them into the silent funeral. The dark. In a short while, everyone inside here will not be around. When you really think about it. When you really think about it. How many in here will end this century? The children. You realize that? There's going to come a time, even the youngest children are going to sleep. You don't know what's going on. The babies. Everybody in this room, the Lord does not return. What would have been the purpose of our lives? Just so you have some fun. You go to some great parties, where some great fetes, you know, ATI was great. Why in the grill weekend, the great escape, you know. That is it? That's all you've had? Well, I graduated first class. Did very well. I had the honor yesterday of interviewing the Rhodes Scholar and the Commonwealth Caribbean scholars. You look at these guys, Campion graduates who are, I mean, first in physics in the island, 14 distinctions at high school, all the top prizes at UA medical faculty, both of them members of the first honor society of UA Medical Society, first dean's list, number one, number two graduates in medicine in the entire Caribbean, on and on.
Yeah, good. 23 achievement. I mean, remarkable achievement. And they're going on to one of the finest universities in the world, Oxford. And they might get to do some great things in neurosurgery or in obstetrics. And they will help some people and so on. But after time, there'll be no more. So what's the best that we can get? There's an Indian billionaire who is building a 25-story house. 25.
Office story.
It's the grandest thing in India. I think it's costing $2 billion U.S. 25 stories. With gardens inside. When they describe the thing. Carlos Slim, the richest man in the world, $53 billion. Yes, so what? He's going to die. And he needs to lose some weight, you know, by the way. Not looking so well. He's not so slim at all. Right? So what would have been the purpose of all of that? People don't think. As Osman says, I... a stranger and afraid in a world I never made. People don't think about these things. I mean, you know, in fact, you have some friends say, mind your mad, you know. Mind your think so much, you get mad. You read too much book, you know. The society has a way of even intimidating those of us who think about these things. It's part of the whole anesthetics. It's to make we are the weird ones. Amazing. We who think about them, something, we now become the weird ones. Because we're not in the real world. Them under a cloud. Centuries ago, the great Stoic emperor Marcus Aurelius wrote, observe how transient and trivial is all mortal life. Yesterday, a drop of semen. Tomorrow, a handful of hashes. I know you would love it. A drop of semen. Tomorrow. That's all. What would have been the purpose of it? Yeah, bright people say they're educated and leave university and I know think about them someday. And you're going on to make a lot of money and you become lawyer or doctor or celebrity journalist. And you've never... So what is the sense of your law degree? Or your medical? And your philosophical dunce. So what are you living for? I mean, how? I don't know. I don't know how people don't think about these things. So taken up with material interests. Oh, transient and trivial. Yesterday a drop of semen, tomorrow a handful of dust. So spend these fleeting moments on earth as nature. He wasn't a thief. He believed just in nature, as nature would have you spend them. And then go to your rest with good grace. As an olive falls in its season, with a blessed that bore it, and a thanksgiving to the tree that gave it life. So I was thinking about these things. From early. What is the purpose of life? And you know, you don't really find a man on the road who will pass out a track about redemption talking about himself. A man said, boy, Jesus died on the cross, you know, accept the Lord, you go in the bus. You know, will you accept Jesus? You know, it's a, you know, a long year, Jesus with some thing on his head and him a bleed and Jesus love you and all that kind of thing. I never come to Christianity though, really. I came thinking about life. So the young lady asked me how I stayed. I stayed because I fell in love with philosophy, fell in love with reading and thinking, and the anesthetic couldn't hold me. One escape. He couldn't hold me with pleasure. Do I, as you have picked up from listening to my sermons, I have eyes not just for books. You don't have to listen to me carefully to pick that one up. That I have eyes for more than books. But what keep me? What keep me? Bought this for $30. One article. $30 on the net. Actually, about five of them. That is a lot of money. But anyway, that's what it is. The good, the true, and the beautiful. Toward a unified account of the great meaning in life by philosopher Thaddeus Metz. In the latest issue of the Philosophical Journal of Religious Studies, December issue. $30. I give it free. 2,500. One article of 20 words, of 20 pages. One article I spend that for. But a man goat and drink him Hennessy with him friend and spend that. I spent $14,000 for buy five articles. And you say, well, crazy, this is a waste. But a man goat to beat juice one night. And that's cute. And I pick and boast about it and write about the star. I'm going to give him praises for that. I mean, only a madman. Anesthetics. Yeah, man, there's a few pages. $30, yeah. But I would buy it for this line. A philosopher looking about life. So me have eyes. I have eyes for other things. Me have human nature, which is to lust, to have greed, to be distracted. I have the same human nature. But what's life about? Contouring reason to fundamental objectives. The good, the true, and the beautiful confer great meaning on life insofar as we transcend our animal nature, positively orienting our rational nature in a substantial way toward conditions of human existence. That is what I've been doing from 72. Cut off carrying the girls at the house. No pastor over me for years. Nobody monitoring me. Cut off that. No drinking. Nobody monitoring my Sabbath attendance. Football playing. the ball field is right before my yard. Ian, don't go out there any Saturday anymore. I don't know of any church in Jamaica. I'm not a part of a church. Nobody can report me. Me on my own. Self-regulation. Don't go out there on Sabbath to play any more football. No Friday night parties without any minister, without any church brother encouraging me. Just a man in tune with his purpose, having the desire to still carry the girls them, tormented, can't sleep a whole part time, want bringing the girls them, but understanding philosophically the good life is about controlling the animal nature and using the rational nature. There was a time when an educated person in the classical sense, was a person who understand them something when we talk about. Wasn't just a man who just live and drink and have how much woman and have same have fun. Those were seen as barbarians. Plato used to look down at those people. You know, he used to say these little barbarians are just, you know, living for the, you know, sex in the squares, and they're going to prostitutes and so on. Or consorting, you know, just seeing life as just about sensuality. Plato would say, those men can't rule society. You must have philosopher kings who rule society. Men who learn to rule their nature. Because how can you be talking about the just society if you can't control yourself? The problem you have with corruption in Jamaica. You don't have enough breakfasts to control. You don't have enough. DPP cannot prosecute the number of cases of corruption. Because we are ingenious at finding ways to be corrupt. Once there's a will, the Jamaican man will find a way to be corrupt. What you need is a fundamental moral revolution. Where even a man broken and starve, him not passing your thing down a customs. Because who will guard the guards? Or, as Steel Paul sing, who's gonna bodyguard, Mr. Bodyguard? Who is gonna bodyguard? The same people who make the systems and who are in charge of enforcing the systems. If they are corrupt. So not election time coming up around soon.
This year.
So who do you not buy now? Yeah, your corruption thing, people are corrupt and all that. Yeah, so we are choosing. What kind of leaders we are going to have? We're going to have leaders because you have the two parties of people who are charged for corruption. The two parties of people who are charged for corruption, who are under investigation for corruption. So where we going? So it is a matter of changing the parties. Rasta man. You have been reading the Star a lot about Rasta man. We have a fundamental problem and it's captured in Jeremiah. Jeremiah 2. At the start of the year, after the fireworks have disappeared and the clappers have ceased, it is time to reflect on the real meaning of our lives. Because, you know, we make resolutions at this time of the year and we have great plans. But unless we are thinking about the overarching purpose of life. What's the purpose of these plans if they are not in the context of the great things that we should be concerned about? You think about it. You're born in a world. You are told to go to school. To do well. Pass your exams. And when you pass your exams at university level, you go on to get a good job, perhaps to get married, but certainly to buy a good house, good car, have things to show off on your friends, have status, power, and so on. And then you prepare for retirement. Yes. To what? Play golf and... I can't imagine myself retiring. To do what? To play golf or to the gardening? If I have a purpose, if when I'm doing my gardening, I'm reflecting on the kingdom of God. But if that's all, at 75, no O'Connor. Get up in the morning, turn on the radio, listen to Perkins. Yeah. The day done. I couldn't live like just waiting to die. Can I reach 80s now? I'm waiting just to die. And that's it. And that to be a successful life. What is more puzzling is that God goes into the hospital, rescues the people out of the anesthetics, take them out of the deep coma, open their eyes. What is more amazing is not that the world is under the anesthetics, but that these persons, we, whose eyes have been opened, go back into the hospital and ask for the anesthetics. No, how can you imagine? Can you imagine, we know who know what life is about. You know, a child of six, you know, the things that the child of six interested in. A child of six and five. What would you think about a person who is 35, whose major excitement is playing marbles or dandy shandy? You wouldn't have to study Professor Coles' work to know that something is seriously wrong with this 35-year-old. But watch this. The things that the six-year-old is interested in, things they find fun, and they get a lot of adrenaline expansion from. At 35, you find there are other things. There are other levels of pleasures. So you expect to graduate. How can a person understand, whose mind has been open to the truth, who understand that life is more than partying, more than sex, more than getting a good job, more than having a good relationship? Who can you know go back and start live just for that? So another question to the youth who asks me. I find it hard to go back and ask for the anesthetics in the hospital. To go back into the coma. To just live now for all the beautiful women whom I've seen in New Kingston and various places where I go. To now start live just for fame and fortune and get just obsessed with money and start miss my Monday meeting and too tired for prepare quality sermons. So over the years, what has happened is I have reinforced myself in my seeness and in my consciousness. So I'm building that up. And I have no desire to go back into the bondage. I do have a nature though. I do have a nature that pulls me to that. I have not escaped that nature. I do have that nature. I still have that animal nature, as the philosophers would call it. Your human nature, as the Bible puts it, influenced by Satan. But because I understand, I realize, as the Apostle Paul says, I have to put my body under subjection. Put it under subjection, pummel it, lest I become a castaway. In Jeremiah 2, we read, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem, just as the Lord, I remember the devotion of your youth, your love as a bride, how you followed me in the wilderness in a land not sown. And Israel was then holy of the Lord. Brethren, it would be unfortunate for the Lord to say this of us. It's unfortunate for the Lord to say that we who knew better have now fallen back into a trance. One of the things the press does at the end of every year are stories. They left us in 2008. They left us. Internationally, the New York Times last weekend had another thing. They left us. You know, I was shocked when I was watching Fareed Zakaria on Sunday to find out that Richard Albrook had died suddenly. Great, towering intellectual in the field of diplomacy and in international relations studies, and President Obama's special ambassador to Afghanistan. Leslie Gelb, another brilliant foreign policy expert, was saying, he was having dinner with him up the night before, talking about great issues of Pakistan and the Middle East and the problems there in Asia. The next day, he had died suddenly. Embolism. She kept licking a lot of people, you know. There's no way to prepare for it. You go to the doctor and everything is all right. it just hits you suddenly. Sagicor, Spanish stone branch, throw bombs, has died suddenly over that. So it go. They left us. But the physical death is one thing. Unfortunately, we had those who left us also spiritually dead over the last year. Last year, at the beginning of the year, I'd warned about Satan's wiles, warned about the tactics of the enemy. Asked all of you to avoid the tactics, to avoid the pitfalls and the booby traps. Not everyone followed. Some bit the dust, some were with us at the beginning, bit the dust in the year. Some of them, I could see that they were on life support. And I had hoped that they would get the help. I have some word to the weak. I have some word to the strong, word to the weak. But last year also affected some of the strong. It was not just the weak who stumbled badly in 2010 in the Church of God. Some of the strong also. There are certain pitfalls of the strong. Hope I can get to that. But let's continue with Jeremiah 2. Hear the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel. Thus says the Lord, what wrong did your fathers find in me? You know, I love the philosophical resonance of some of these passages, you know. I love the rational argumentation. I love the summoning of good arguments, a good legal case. What wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness and became worthless? Those who were with me for some part of the journey in my 39 years in the church, what better have they found? I have to ask myself, because I want to know whether I'm a fool. The people who leave the church, they find something better than me. I confess to a certain intellectual pride in that an intellectual pride actually paradoxically comes out of a humility, believe it or not, because I'm aware that there's so much to know and there's so little of that much that is to be known that I know. I always want more. I want to find more. I want to get more. I have this insatiable appetite. This really insuperable drive to get everything. So I really want to know those who will leave. What better thing than find? What them leave means something that is it because I'm not thinking why I'm still here? Why I stick it out? Is it because I have ambition? What better? I mean, where am I leave the church? For what? So, some job? Man get a job, we have to work and so what? Man want to open a business? A fool. Who is the one who doesn't have an ambition? Anybody, if God exists at all, and let's assume that because certainly those who have dropped out of that assumption, they haven't looked at the philosophical arguments for atheism or agnosticism. But if God exists, if God is the author of this vast universe, with these billions of galaxies, this wide world, and yet, as far as we know, as far as science has demonstrated, the only place where there is this intelligent life, planet Earth, that science can't understand, because science can't discover that there's anything in heaven and whatever. But by dear scientific tools, this little speck is the only place where, because I want you to know this one thing, even though the universe is vast, and overpowering, and is so gigantic as to make us of no significance. Even though the universe is so fast, it does not know it is there. And tiny, puny human being knows it is there. And we have consciousness. That is our superiority. No matter how vast the planets are, no matter how vast the galaxies are, they don't know that they exist. But human beings, consciousness. But the animals have consciousness too. What makes us distinctly human? It's not just consciousness. The animals have vast. Animals have vast intelligence. That's intelligence. Intelligence of a chimpanzee, and it's amazing. You have even artificial intelligence. Intelligence is not what distinguishes humans. What distinguishes humans? Not consciousness either. Because animals have consciousness. It's volition and will. The capacity for moral action is the one thing that is distinctly human. Whether you want to believe it, whether you hear it or not, the capacity for reflection and moral evaluation. Scorpions do what scorpions do. They make no moral evaluation of their work. It's in their nature. The lion is a predator and does not philosophize about the morality of going after its prey. It is in its nature. Human beings are the only species that have the capacity to reflect. And you know what hedonism and pleasure-oriented thing does? It takes away the one thing that makes us distinctly human. I was thinking the other day that of all the slangs that are appropriate, I think the slangs used among black Americans and us The slang of greeting each other, I think it's very appropriate. Wagwan dog, I think it is very appropriate. Wam dog. Wam dog. Very appropriate. It is philosophically significant. And in our case, we add a superlative. In our case, we are old dog, which is an appropriate term for our sexually promiscuous men. It's right. It's right. A man who can't control himself. What if he has boast and thinks a woman have him weak? He's no higher than a dog. Man who says a woman have him weak. Who can't control himself? A man who won't crash him car. Can't see a woman in a short skirt and high heel shoes. Man who won't run at the back of my vehicle. When I look, it's a woman. Sometimes I walk, you know, I see a beautiful, sexy girl passing, pass a man. I just see a man stretching his head. And like the man, I say, boy, I should get that number, you know, I'm sure. Like the man, I said to myself, you know, should I go back? And you can't see him, if I agonize, you know, you can't see the perplexing. Like the man said, should I go, you know, should I make her go? She's going. Should I make her go? Like, no. A couple of them say, okay, I make her pass. There's some women, I see, I mean, you know, even as me as a Christian, there's some women on the road to that. Had you not had control over that dog, if I were a dog, I can't imagine if I were a dog. Because you have dog and you have top dog, you know. You have top dog, right? So, you know, I would be a top dog. I wouldn't be an ordinary dog. Because as happens in animal kingdom, who laughed? As happens in animal kingdom, certain of the animals with the most resources get the most prey. It's society organized. So men with more money and more status and more connections and power get more women. So I'm in that position. I'm in that position. By virtue of my profession, my celebrity, and so on, to be a top dog. What keeps me? The stripping away of the veil. The understanding of what life is about. So I can celebrate for 39 years. Because I realize the futility of life. Jeremiah 2. They did not say, where is the Lord who brought us up from the land of Egypt, who led us in the wilderness, in a land of deserts and pits. They didn't ask that. And I brought you into a plentiful land. They were not reflecting the anesthetics of them. Look at verse 11. As a nation ever changed its gods, even though there are no gods. But my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit. Be appalled, O heavens, at this. Be shocked, be utterly desolate. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and have hewed out cisterns for themselves. Broken cisterns that can hold no water. Philosophically and poetically poignant writing. So the people them who leave, how them better off than me? Who leave church? They're happier than me? You think so? You're more contented? And they're living more meaningful? No, all them going get is what I'm working for now. None of them who leave, they don't know how long they're going to live, whether they're going to die. I might die before my next campaign, but that's no problem. It's just like a second elapsing. Not so for them. They're going to be lost. One opportunity for salvation to those who know. So how are they better off? If I lose all that I have and I mash up on poverty, this is only a few years. If this life is a preparation for the next night, so what? If I maintain character and grow through the sufferings and become a God being in the world,
tomorrow, how would I have lost? Matthew 13, one of my favorite passages that talks about this hidden treasure. Matthew 13, 44. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up, and in his joy he sells all that he has and he buys that field. My brethren, friends, at the beginning of 2011, this faith that we have is a treasure that is worth giving up and exchanging everything else for. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. That's how I see myself. I read restlessly and ceaselessly because I want to discover what is out there. I don't want to know that there's something better than what me have. I mean, I know about it. Something better I want to know what I leave to. But if me I leave, it can be because me want a woman apart from my wife. No, it is not a worthy. Part of my nature would want that. But my thinking, the one thing that makes me a human being, which is my ability now, not to live by instinct. What's the difference between us and that? Animals live by instinct. Instinct. Sometime of the year, some animals behave some ways. Others behave some ways throughout their characteristically. We call it instinct. The animals don't have freedom, you know. They have instinct. They operate on instincts. They operate on drives that they don't control and they don't evaluate. I'm going to tell you about him going to study at Harvard. But him can't keep away from crack cocaine. He's a sex addict. He has an explosive anger that he just can't control. No matter what him cuss off any professor, him cuss off colleagues, him can't control him anger. He's an alcoholic. You know, my great friend Maxwell Agri did an interesting, and it could be controversial. He said openly, he said, drank a lot. He said, John was an alcoholic. He did come to the time. It was very late. But he decided to stop, and he mustered the thing to stop. He was an alcoholic. And I thought about the friends I have lost because of moral imperfections. John, because of the smokiness, even though his rational mind, he read too much. He knew enough. He knew what it was doing. And he disproved Plato's view that all man needs is just knowledge. All we need is not knowledge. Our whole powers have knowledge. But we don't exercise the will and the capacity for control and to use the knowledge. John knew what smoking was doing, but never had the will, the power of it. And I used to say to myself, are you a man so brilliant and controlled by a bottle of vodka? Love vodka and tonic. I used to see him drunk. Sometimes I could hardly move him. Another man, I regard him as one of the greatest intellectuals in we ever produced. Wasn't great in terms of coming new ideas, but he was a synthesizer. Carl Stone. Died of AIDS. Stone could not leave the whorehouses in downtown and Kingston. We lost Stone early and Stone was young. There was a lot of productive years that he could have given to this country and to the Caribbean. One of the finest minds. He was another great influence on me in terms of, because I determined that when Stone left as a columnist, that I would replace Stone and bring an intellectual and a scholarly approach to journalism. That was what has been distinctive about my column writing. I wanted to bring that level of research at Stone. There was a vacuum in journalism.
lost tone because he couldn't keep his pants up. I can only talk about it because his wife has spoken about it. And his friends would tell me about the episodes in downtown. And early, you know, the 60s, 70s, you know, the big, before you had a lot of the clubs up here, downtown was where the big spots for the prostitutes. And the big intellectual couldn't control. You know how many great scientists, artists, and others are dying now because of AIDS? And other diseases, AIDS alone, you know. A lot of lifestyle diseases. A lot of cardiovascular diseases. Lifestyle. I had a friend, not a journalist too, Bel Infante, who died. Was overweight. Couldn't control him eating. Peter Phillips at the funeral was talking. He said, boy, from JC days, you know. When Pat come in with him big ice cream in the night, nobody's going to get any eat out of that ice cream, you know. Love. And Pat win both 700, it was a big gambler. He bought 700,000 this Saturday. And Monday morning, they find him dead in his house. What a whole for you, because there's a lot of money and all that. Never get through it. Enjoy it. Couldn't control him eating. And a whole for time, you know. It happened for them amongst certain intellectual business people. And me see how personal weaknesses mash up them middle of them business life. The young, brilliant doctor I interviewed yesterday, who's a Commonwealth Caribbean scholar. We couldn't go into much of it, but he discussed on my program a very sensitive and painful thing. His father has been a cocaine addict for a number of years. He told me how he achieved all this distinction, and his father is a cocaine addict, and his mother and sister affected by it. The extent where both of them are sick. And him did all of that. Both his mother and thing affected by it. His father was a brilliant man and a quantity surveyor. Has not been able to work for years or do anything because of cocaine addiction. You know how many people destroyed their cocaine with alcohol? That's the greatest killer. You know why alcohol is so bad? Because it's a socially acceptable drug. We don't look down on people. If a man coke, he might look down on a man or he might hide. Alcohol. You can buy it. It's cheap. It is acceptable to drink. It's hip to drink. You can drink until people say you're moderate, but you're well and drunk. It's a dangerous thing. By the way, there's been a big problem in the church. Not here, but there's been a big problem. Because we believe in moderation, as the Bible says. Some people don't know how to stop. So I don't serve it at our social function. Even though alcohol is not bragging, you know, I don't. Even though we can't get free alcohol. We can't get free Red Stripe. Not from Roe. I know the effects of alcohol. Destroyed many, many families. They are brilliant men and women, brilliant people who could have advanced civilization because they never have control. So our societies now, apart from educating people in professions and vocations, must start educating people in character, because you're going to lose a lot of people. We're going to start lose people through all kinds of diseases. Because them do have the self-control to master them urges. I know everything where your eyes see and you want, you're good for you. I thank God for Christianity. Because a man like me would have been terrible without the Holy Spirit. I thank God for that restraining force. I thank God, take me out, release me from the anesthetics. I thank the Lord that I have found the pearl of great price. And so every year, I merely renew what has been a commitment for years. Renew that commitment. It's a commitment to live not in the futility of the world. Genesis 25, we read the sad story of Esau. The sad story of Esau, who sold his birthright because of pressure. This is one of the temptations. One of the temptations of the strong. You see it? You can be released from the anesthetic. You can come out and your eyes are wide open. You can come out with a determination not to live a futile life, but I'm telling you, the pressures of life. The pressures of life have claimed many a good Christian. The distractions of life. Spiritual Jim Screechy. I warn the strong. I've seen others fallen because of this. Fallen because of this pressure. After a time, you know, life bears down on us. I tell you, you know, the strong people, after a time, you know, you have the resolve, you overcome, you do well, you know, but the race is not for the swift. See, a man has studied for medicine, you know, he put 13 years of hard work and do it all, sleep and so on, but he know a time will come when him get through and him can have a little more freedom. But when you take up this thing for life, and when the pressures are at you, because with this thing, you know, you're supposed to be moral every day. Sometimes you want a break. Sometimes you want a little break for do a thing. You want a little gym screen. You want to make a little gym screen to move. Sometimes you want a little break and come back. You come back. But you want a little refresher in the world. The pressures. Pressures are there. And you can reach a point where you want to give in. Now, let's remember Esau's word. You know, Esau says, I'm about to die. So what is the use of this birthright? Because I'm going dead. But you know, the position that I hold is that this life is not really that crucial anyway, you know. And therefore, if we have to die, what will happen to a civilization where people believed that there is no cause for which a man to die? A civilization needs enough people who believe that there are some causes worthy of giving our lives to, literally, and dying for. Why we give medals of honor and medals for bravery to fallen soldiers? Even the world accepts that there's some honor in giving up your life for something. And you look about at these useless world wars and these wars of choice that these big countries have gone into unnecessarily and have sacrificed the lives of people like Moloch. And people have look at it honorable. And a man would not. But I make up my mind, you know, brethren, if it's debt, whether through starvation, because me now work on a Saturday or no holidays. But I think he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep for that which he cannot lose. He's no fool. Give it up. Because we can't keep it anyway. When recession come and a man kick me out of a job. Me see a man who say me can't leave the job here for Sabbath. Because boy, I'm not going to starve. And when a man say I'm restructure. Or a man say that the tide of competition has made his business uncompetitive. And I have to go. He say, boy, you're very good and all that. But the media business have changed so much now. And everybody gone now to online journalism. So I listen more to write to newspaper and TV, everything they gone now, you know. A lot of people now are citizen journalists. So your ideas are the old time journalism. You go and find something else to do. Or learn mechanics or something like that. You know, say starvation, that for me.
If you can learn mechanics at a date.
So if I have to find some means of living, when a man pushes me off, why can't I consciously decide? I am not going to stay in this job.
Because of issues of Sabbath. I'm not staying. I walk off. Some are under pressure, especially all women. Loneliness. I tell you all the time, sisters, hold on to your victory. Do not let loneliness push you to make bad decisions. A number of books coming out now about how we make decisions based on emotions rather than rational calculations. Don't make your loneliness push you into a desperation to make decision.
Talk to your friends them who in relationships and want to come out and look for ways to come out.
Single loneliness is not the worst loneliness. A whole heap of married people lonely and then trapped. Can't come out so easy. Can't marriage, you know, have some legal implication and a man not think about much, you know. And just them better think about it before them go commit. That's some legal thing with man property and thing, you know. That a man lose a whole heap of thing through divorce, you know. So a lot of people just stay for the convenience of it. And some want to come out and some hope for the partner dead or something happen. So, think about those things. Your loneliness as a single person is not the worst condition. I don't say it's the best condition, but it's not the worst condition. Don't let that loneliness drive you to make a decision that in your cooler moments you would not make. I talk to you, even strong brethren. You need to think about this for this year. Do not sell out your birthright. Do not join the casualties of 2010 and the years before as a result of bad decisions because you're under pressure.
Weeping may endure for a night, but joy coming to mind. Take the pressure. It's not going to last forever. Either the situation change, you change or you die. But somehow something never happened. It not last forever. Can you not live forever? So that is the hope. You can't live it out, you dead it out. Again, make me think rationally. While we laugh, make me think rationally. If there is an eternal life, if there is an eternal life, if the atheist man, if you say there's nothing, but if there is an eternal life, if there is endless life, if there are thousands of years to get, you tell me rationally now. Even a rational atheist will agree with the statement I'm about to make. You tell me, set, if you say you're lonely, and your doctor tells you, well, Miss Fraser, you know I'm having all these headaches. No doctor can, you know, doctor know everything. You need some sex in your life. It is going to affect you very badly. You are very depressed over your loneliness. You need a relationship. Doctor, I'm a Christian. I know. So I don't want to take away from your belief, you know, but I'm just advising. I can't tell you how to live your life. And you go home when doctor put you on others, you know. You say, person can't talk, but person no doctor. Person might doctor theology honorary, but him not doctor medicine. And doctor tell me what I need. Let us say even doctor right. Let's say doctor right. It better the headache go and take you. You want to get brain hemorrhage. Yes, it better. If your sexual sin, again, me only go up on the base, I won't accept the Bible and anything, you know. If your sexual sin will lead you, even the atheists will agree with me. If there's an eternal, or if you believe that there's an eternal life, and the sexual sin will keep you out, it cannot make sense by no standard of rationality. It cannot make sense for you to risk that eternal life. for years that you can't determine, you don't know what years it's going to be. You're a fool. I stand and argue with you on any ground. You're a fool if you would not die. If you believe what you believe. If you're an atheist who feels that this is the only life and there's no God and they don't, then go have as much sex. But they cannot understand us, brethren. We understand. For this year I say, therefore, the pressures are going to come. The pressures will come this year. Let us not be like Esau. Come here, telling that the man was famished, you know. Man's soul in birthright. Jacob was smart enough, you understand. That's a funny thing, you know. Jacob, he put him in a bad light, but Jacob did realize the importance of the birthright. And sometimes these worldly people, even some of these worldly persons who will lead us astray, when them get them opportunity, I told them when Christ, shame at us to know that we knew all these things and we were compromising. They're going to put us to shame. So these worldly people, when them went take the thing with such zeal, we're going to be amazed. I urge the strong to watch two areas in your life this year, particularly marriage and money. Marriage and money issues have slain more strong people than John Reed Bout. I warn the strong. Watch your marriage. I've seen strong people crushed, be a shadow of themselves, spiritually emaciated because of marital stress. Now, all these things, and I before I preach them, I try to think about. I have many talks with my wife. I asked her to help me along this journey here, but I don't depend on her. I made a commitment 39 years ago before I knew her, and when she was very young. I have a mission in life, you know. And I now make no wife sabotage a mission, you know. Me now make no picnic sabotage a mission, you know. Me now make no employer sabotage. Me now make no government. Me now make none of you know. Sabotage my mission. Come on, focus. Strong, I urge you to pay attention in 2011 to your marriage. Don't regard this thing as well as you can mind. You have your spiritual life and your married life. Your married life got down. Your spiritual life is going to be affected. Certainly your weakness is going to be affected. I urge you. There are some things that might happen beyond your control. There are some things that might happen to you. You can't. You know, when you really think of it, you don't have absolute control over your spouse. You know, I was reflecting on that. You don't have absolute control. Even domineering husbands who feel them have absolute control don't. Domineering husbands who are a watch woman. You have someone a watch woman and a. You know, jealous of everything and a follow up. You can't. If a woman go astray and Jim screechy, you, no matter how you watch her, or when you are look upon the woman, yes. The woman a Jim screechy, and you are looking her eye and you don't see what is going on. In other thing. Woman are the greatest Jim screechers. That has nothing to do with the two people I've asked to. They are far from that. When you really think about it, so a godly man, you don't have total control. You know what that means? It means, therefore, you have to, in your marriage, you have to have contingency plan. If your wife goes astray, your wife got bad, you must make sure that does not derail you. One of the things you must have as a Christian, you must always have your contingency plans. You must always have your plan B's and C's. You must not be caught by surprise. You must not be caught flat-footed. You must be so focused on the mission And not only that, you see it around, you see other people in the church, you see other strong people in marriage and affect them. You have examples, you're surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. Don't be a fool, don't walk into the same trap. Watch your marriage. Money is the other issue. Money worries is one of the biggest killers. Strong people. After a time, you're dedicated to God, you know, you're zealous. You come Monday meeting, you come all Sabbath and so on. Money problem can affect your zeal. You can start compromise. You can start thinking about things that you would not have thought about generally. You know, a Christian has to be such a planner. You know, when you're a Christian and you plan how to manage your money well, or you plan new ways to earn more money, don't make another over-righteous Christian, you know. I come tell you that you put too much attention to them because secular things. That has a lot to do with your spiritual life. If those things start falling and through your bad planning, your bad decisions, it will affect you spiritually. Pay attention to money. Pay attention to money issues. In 2011, if the riches increase, don't set your heart upon it. If you don't have any money, don't be anxious about it. I warn the strong. Money worries. I warn the strong about sicknesses, either of yourself or family members, your children. These things wear you out. There are some things that can wear you out. And sometimes you have a combination. Sometimes you have sickness, you have marital problem, you have money problem. Sometimes when Satan has come at you, you know, and when he can't get rid of one thing, you know, him fling the world book of things against you, you know. You have to prepare for that too. So now if you say, boy, you have to deal with marital problem. But money is alright, God give you ease. Sometimes it takes you from outside. You have to be resilient and resourceful as Christians. Sometimes come from all angles and all sides. Sometimes I live in a church. I tell you now, because your feast will buy money and marriage and everything, but you have a church and your pastor. And your pastor crush you with him sermon them. Harsh, judgmental sermon, they crush you. You have to know how to deal with that too. Sometimes the brethren, where you expect now to help you, your brethren start talk about your marriage problem and spread it. Your brethren, are you hungry? And your brethren, who's supposed to show love and give you a little help? You know your brethren have it, man. Your brethren probably waste it. And buy out to let them help you. You have to know how to deal with that. How to deal with all the lack of love. Because when you're in need, and you see people can't help you, they're not helping you. You can develop a root of bitterness. You have to guard yourself against that. When you are strong, and you know what you're giving to the church. And when you in your knees, nobody is there for you. That can hurt you. Prepare for that hurt in 2011. Be strong. Must watch those things. The strong must realize it's a failure. If you don't know how to manage this. You know what one of the greatest killers for strong people? Failure and not the failure. The sense of guilt and disappointment that comes with it. You see, a weak person feel. Weak person so accustomed to feel. Everybody in the church expect them to feel. And nobody never think about them. You see, when you are a big tapernaris and people look up to you, and you feel, there's a sense of guilt. See, like how she love chat a lot in her service and make up nice. If she all fall down somewhere, you know, see, like how you love make nice, you know. When him fall in a certain way, you know. No, because but you can't come in and quiet because everybody will know. The easy affair no come. You can't quiet from once you come, you're expecting nice. So if you don't hear the nice, you don't know something wrong. And before you know something wrong, she don't come. Let me understand these things. The strong has to be careful. A person who always coming to church, always coming to the Monday meeting, always coming to the thing. When the more monkey climb, the more him expose. So the more You're doing well as a strong and people looking up to you. When you start feel, you start have a sense of guilt, disappointment, and a whole cascade of emotions. Watch that, strong people. You have to know to manage failure. And you have to know to take the shame. You have to remember Jesus, that he's merciful. You have to remember, even when your brethren and your pastor condemn you, you have to remember that your final evaluation is from Christ. And it's that you have to keep in your mind, not to lose your way and give up totally. When your brethren and your pastor throw you out, then the Lord will take you in. If your heart right. So strong people, you have to learn how to manage failure. I'm giving you some keys, you know, because I didn't have time to go in this book, Bounce, that talks about success, successful artists, successful musicians, people who are successful in a variety of fields, or the book Outliers, that deal with the story of success. I didn't have time to get into these. But suffice it to say, both of them make the point. Those who are successful are people who learn through failure. In fact, failure is a part of the process of building success. It is through failure you develop certain competencies. I'm telling you, if you go on learning and you're not failing sometimes, you might not develop certain skills. I'm not going to fail, okay? You're not going to look for failure, you know. It all come. So I'm not going to encourage you to run out. You have to learn. In 2011, some never learned and they did not make it. They started a year with us and didn't make it because they just could not forgive themselves. As I come to a close, I want to talk to admonish the weak. To the weak members of the church, I want to say the first thing you need is humility. One of the things I notice about many weak people, they don't have humility. Very ironic. You can't point out, they're easy to vex and offended about their weakness. I learned very early in life, don't bother make excuses when you're wrong. Weak brethren, I want to give you some advice. One, do not wish for the standards of the church to be watered down to meet your weakness. Do not. While we are strong, must be merciful toward you. It is not. I want to warn you, weak people. It is not in your interest. Do not wish that the pulpit stop carrying the hard line. Whenever in any organization, any institution. When you start dumb down the standards, everybody loses. Let me tell you that. You go to a little second-rate school, you know, probably the whole educational system. You go to certain schools, nothing expected of you. You go to a certain school and change the name, call it new secondary. But when you come in, the teachers themselves don't expect nothing of you. Them start telling you, say, you're done, stand where your father is and whatever. After that time, you don't expect nothing of yourself. The teachers don't try to teach you a certain level, because they assume that you can't learn. Weak people don't know. Someone who don't want. We carry some little wishy-washy things for suit and weakness. I am telling you. It is better you are in an environment where you have zealots and you see what can be done. It is better you are in an environment where you see people who really involved in deep practice of the faith. And you have some physical people, at least you can look to say, human beings can do that. It's better you have that than a church of pure slackers. Weak people, it is not in your interest for the standards to come down to you. But you come to church when you feel like and do what you feel like and worship your family. It is not a good thing to want the zealots to be like you. Because what is going to happen? Let me tell you the law. How this law go? You're not going to stay still. You're going to get worse. You see, as when the standards are lowered from the leadership, you're not going to stay where you are. You know, you ain't go further down. The day you start seeing me, I come to church sometime. Rather than missing 15 times a year, you're going to miss 35. Today, you might not know it. You might feel, say, well, but even though you might say, well, I'm self-righteous, you still look up to me in a way. You still admire my persistence. You still admire, say, I put God before everything else. You still admire, say, success not change me. Every day I wake up and know, say, no matter what you might think as a weak person, I have to live and be strong for you. Because when I start fail, you're going to lose confidence. You say, boy, pastor, can I do them thing there, same thing there? And pastor, can I miss them thing there? Then what about me? You know, as I was walking with my wife after the Solomon wedding, I saw Brother O'Connor lumbering toward his vehicle. We have to 10. And I was struck. I saw him lumbering there. And as I thought that this man was driving all the way to Montego Bay, I was very emotional as I was walking my wife. And I saw the man in front of me and I said, in 15 minutes I'll be home. I've given all this I was now to Solomon this, on my sacred day Sunday when I should be reading. But in 15 minutes when I am home, this man, I'm telling you, because you know, holiday period. I said, well, I'm saying, no, you know, but a lot of people want electricity this time, you know, tomorrow I'm working. I said, this man would have had to drive Montego Bay. When I'm going to Montego Bay, I think for weeks, I have to go to Montego Bay. He's going to be driving alone for all those hours just because of service. You know, because I want a wedding, I want a cake. Just to serve the people. And I look and I say, that's the future of the church. This is the kind of church I'm a part of. We are man who do that. And after when I hear says after two, the man reach home to the church. I say, it's that kind of church I want to be a part of. That me, I think so, me give up 7 hours. Here is this man. He have to go and drive all that way at him own expense to all that whatever. And get up back early in the morning for putting in a full day of work and probably for a drive all that thing as part time work. Think of Hendrick so many mornings. Somebody tell me, you know, when he prepare all for this, sometimes he's up on the trail card preparing. He's a perfectionist when it comes to what you see as natural. What you see as natural. The amount of work. The family. The sacrifice. He said, I tell him, listen, if when me I leave out time already, me gone, but my business, me gone my way. You know? If now make wife, make him late. When I think of the dedication, I feel so good to be a part of an organization with leaders like these. Man, I want to tell you, don't drop off, because as strong as I am, when you drop off, it will affect me. It is important for us to be a part of an organization where we see people doing things that challenge us, that challenge the best in us, that make us want to give more and more and to sacrifice. We are not of those who draw back. So we will have patience to you. We will have patience. Because the Bible tells us, the Bible gives us an injunction. We who are strong must bear with the feelings of the weak. So if me say I'm strong, me must bear with your feelings. But I tell you, don't wish for us to lower the standards. To show compassion. We're not going to show compassion by lowering the standards. We'll show compassion by working with you lovingly. But we must continue to ring the alarm. We must continue to burn the fire out and to beat down Babylon. I don't want to be in a church where the leaders are putting their wives before a church. No. That's the death of the church. We don't want the Eli's in the church putting them children before. That's the death of the church. You don't want those putting their friends before them, cumbala before the church. You want to be in an organization. Last night I was reading something in the Harvard Business Review about military strategy and about military training. And as part of military training, you are taught when you go out on the mission, you think first about the mission. Then carrying back your men, yourself last. There are a number of lessons with that. The mission first. Do you feel me? When you dip on the battlefield, you know, you cannot distract you and tell boys, you know, my daughter's birthday today. You start getting emotional when rockets are fired.
Yeah.
Oh, your daughter today is Kelly's birthday, and the mush you start remember kind of thing. Your mind gone. A shot a come in your head, and you see your man them get killed. You have to forget about your daughter's birthday. And fire that gun. That's what they do in the thing. Cannot think about your wife and your loving wife and what you're doing back home in Memphis when you're there in Iraq. How can we have men in the church? I tell you about wife and family interests. And family, I decide what them do and what they're about. That's the death of the church. I don't fear death. Tell you what I fear as I close. I don't fear death. I fear leaving the church to men who don't put the church first. I fear reaching a stage after working so hard with these years, putting God before everything and all of us in my life. I fear the day that we have men under the anesthetics. But one of the reasons why I can talk about death and feel good, that I thank God for these men whom we have. O'Connor lumbering that Sunday night, walking with this thing, represents the heart of this church. Represents the future of this church. Represents the strength. It is why we will do well in 2001. It is why we will go on from strength to strength. It is why we will finish this mission. Because we have men like these. We need, brethren, more men and women of zealotry as we work with the weak. Because remember, we have to bring along the weak with us. We have to bring them to catch this vision of God and His work before everything. For us to make this year a prosperous new year in terms of our mission, we have to be focused. We have to be zealous. We have to be consumed by the work of God. That is what I recommit myself to you on January 1st, 2011. I ask you for your recommitment to that also.